Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayeshev. Also this week, I want to announce that the podcast will be moving on the internet, where our new location will be the Pardes website called elmad.pardes.org. That's elmad.pardes.org. The new website, the Elmad website, is our focus for Pardes digital learning, and it contains listings and indexes and enables you to look up the both podcasts and also various written commentaries and teachings from our faculty. So you can check it out today, elmad.pardes.org. As we move the iTunes feed from our current website to Elmad, we're hoping that there will not be any interruptions, but if there is a problem, please go to elmad.pardes.org to get your fix of the weekly podcast. Rabbi Daniel Roth is a faculty member at Pardes, and he also is the director for the Pardes Center for Jewish Conflict Resolution. And now, Rabbi Daniel Roth.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha, Parshat Vayeshev, we have the beginning of the description of the conflict between Joseph and his brothers that will escort us almost to the end of the book of Bereshit. And I want to explore with you, over these brief moments, one of the reasons behind this terrible family conflict that ultimately led to the breaking up of the family, and of course the sale of Joseph into Egypt. And I want to focus on this one verse in chapter 37, verse 2 in Genesis. And through the exploration of this verse, also explore how this verse can serve for us today as an inspiration and a model for how we can actually help heal family rifts and not just read about how they can create more tension amongst family members. So the verse reads as following. I'm going to read it in Hebrew because even understanding the English can be read in many different ways, and it's very problematic, as you'll soon see. Chapter 37, verse 2 reads as follows. Ele toldot Yaakov Yosef ben 17 shana haya ro'e et echav batzon v'hu na'ar et b'nei bilha v'et b'nei zilpa neshe aviv. Now, even just translating, as I said, is very problematic. Okay? We'll start from, and Joseph was 17 years old, and he would shepherd roe et echav, either with his brothers, or he would shepherd his brothers, betzon, with the sheep, v'hu na'ar et b'nei bilha v'et b'nei zinpa. And here too, it's unclear, is he a youth, is he a na'ar, with the children of Bilha and Zilpa, who were the maidservants of Rachel and Leah, or is he somehow being a youth or turning, you know, of them, but not with them? Which, what does that mean? Why does the verse emphasize that these two wives are Neshe Aviv, are indeed the wives of the father? Would anyone think otherwise? Why need to say that? And then finally, the verse ends with "Ve'ave Yosef et dibatam ra'a," and Joseph is bringing their evil report to their father. What evil report? What did he say? And about who? Who is dibatam? About all of the brothers? About some of the brothers? So these are just some of the questions that this one verse of chapter 37, verse 2. Raises. And I want to share with you four commentaries, medieval commentaries, who struggled to bring meaning to this verse, and then see how this can be significant, as I said beforehand, for what we can learn for how families can better relate to one another. And I want to start with the Ramban. The Ramban on this verse, chapter 37, 2, explains where it says, I'm going to read it in English. The verse states that because he was a lad, he was a na'ar, he was constantly with the sons of Bilha and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, never being separated from them on account of his youth. For their father had commanded them to watch over him and serve him, not the sons of the mistress. And he brought an evil report concerning them to their father. In other words, according to the Ramban, what's going on here is that Joseph was the younger, if you will, spoiled child who the maidservant's children, the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, were commanded against their will to have to take care of him, to pamper him and to watch him and to babysit him. And on those people that were commanded to have to take care of him, he is giving an evil report about how good a job or bad a job they're doing for him. And that, of course, brought about their hatred, specifically the hatred of the children of Bilhah and Zilpah towards Joseph. What we have here is a Joseph as a kind of complainer, mentioning kind of the evil report of the injustice that they need to be serving him in a proper way. An alternative explanation we find in the Ibn Ezra, who writes also on verse 2, he says, since he was young, the children of the maidservants placed him to serve them. And continues, and this is what it means, an evil report. Meaning, it's not that the children of Bilhah and Zilpah were serving him, but they were picking on Joseph and having him serve them. So here you have a case which is perhaps a little bit more understandable, where you have a younger child who's actually kind of being bullied. Bullied specifically by those who might themselves be sort of the outcasts of the family. And then he, of course, brings the evil report about what they're doing to him, and that's where the conflict gets started. An alternative interpretation we find in both Rashi and the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, where Rashi writes the following, again on verse 2. And he says that he was shepherding with the sons of Bilhah, Rashi says, meaning that he made it his custom to associate with the sons of Bilhah because his brothers slighted them as being sons of a handmaid. Therefore, he fraternized with them. In other words, Joseph recognizes that the children of Leah are putting down the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. He sees that as an injustice, and therefore he specifically goes out of his way to be with those that are being discriminated against. And in a similar vein, Rashi's grandson, the Rashbam, writes, even more filling in some of the gaps, and again, I'll read it in English, and he was a lad with the children of Bilhah. His youth and his spending time were with the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. And because of this, his brothers, the children of Leah, began to hate him. And I'm going to skip. And with the joyfulness of his youth, he would separate himself from them, meaning from the children of Leah, and spend his time with the children of the maidservants and not with them like a youth. And skipping, for he said to his father, this is how they are disgracing the children of the maidservants, but I am honoring them, and I spend time with them. And then the Rashbam concludes, other literal readers did not get this at all. So the Rashbam, continuing the line of thought that his grandfather Rashi went in, is saying that this youth did not want to make the social distinctions that everyone else in society was already making between the children of Leah, the real lady of the house, and between the maidservants, Bilhah and Zilpah. And he specifically wanted to go out of his way to empower and to be with those who he felt there was a deep injustice being made against them. But all of these three different interpretations, whether they be about Joseph being the pampered upper class, kind of bringing evil report against the lower class maidservant children, like the Ramban has him, or Joseph is the boy being bullied, the younger kid being bullied by the older maidservant children, or that Joseph is going out of his way to help those who he sees a terrible injustice and fight for their rights, all of them are trying to explain what was the evil report that Joseph was bringing that therefore led to the destruction of this relationship. And I think what's important to capture here is that these different commentaries are representing different types of injustice. People might see an injustice of the maidservants or the other infringing upon our rights. Or that a social justice activist seeing that there is an injustice being done against a second-class citizen and fighting to help their rights. Either way, the question comes to what could have been done differently for Joseph to express his perception of injustice so that things did not have to end up the way they did, with the brothers hating him and ultimately selling him and having a terribly family rift. That's the question I think that these verses invite us to try to think creatively how to answer. So I want to share two quick thoughts on what could have been done differently. The first, I'm inspired by a very early interpretation of this story, dating back 2,000 years, even pre-rabbinic times, to a text called the Testament of God. The Testament of God, one of the chapters of the Testaments of the Patriarchs, was a Jewish book, part of the Pseudepigrapha, and it's a compilation of, like a midrash, where in a pseudo way, God or the other children of Jacob are on their deathbed, sharing with their children their life lessons from the different stories that happened to them. And I want to read to you just a couple lines of how God, the son of Zilpah, in this book, is reflecting upon what happened in his interaction with Joseph. So it reads as follows. The copy of the Testament of God, what things he spoke unto his sons in the 125th year of his life. And I'm going to skip a bit. And Joseph told our father, the sons of Zilpah and Bilhah were slaying the best of the flock and eating them. For he saw that I had delivered a lamb out of the mouth of a bear and put the bear to death, but had slain the lamb, being grieved concerning it, that it could not live, and that we had eaten it. And regarding this matter, I was angry with Joseph until the day he was sold, and the spirit of hatred was in me, and I wished not either to hear of Joseph with the ears, or to see him with the eyes, because he rebuked us to our faces, saying, we were eating of the flock without permission. For whatever things he told our father, he believed him. I confess now my sin, my children, that oftentimes I wished to kill him, because I hated him from my heart. Here you have a creative midrash, 2,000 years old, the Testaments of God, sharing a very powerful lesson of how this conflict went wrong. What he is sharing with us in this interpretation is that in reality, or at least from God's perspective, he had actually defended his father's sheep, fought off a bear who was trying to steal the sheep, who had a lamb in its teeth. He tried to save the other sheep in the flock, but he couldn't save the life of that poor lamb, and therefore they decided to put the lamb to death and then to eat the lamb. But Joseph, coming in, only saw part of the scene. He perceived only that they were eating of the best of the flock and therefore stealing from the father's assets, and rebuked them for stealing, and then told their father that they just stole the best of the sheep. That's what infuriated God and had tremendous hatred in his heart towards Joseph. And I think the moral of the story, as one of the tips of how things could have been done differently, is that Joseph rebuked and then told without having really asked the perspective of the other side. when engaging in rebuking, when engaging in confronting somebody in a difficult situation, to what extent are we first and foremost curious to know their perspective? Are we so sure that our interpretation, our glimpse of reality, is the only interpretation, is all the information that's needed? Is it possible that there was a different take on what happened that could have brought a little more complexity, and that we might have recognized that our interpretation was misled? And then all of this could have been avoided. The second lesson that comes out from this text is that the way Joseph went about rebuking them did not bring towards love and friendship between the brothers, but it brought towards hatred and animosity. And he's not even telling it to them only to their face. He's also quickly running and telling on them to their father. So it wasn't said in a way that would invite them repenting if that was the direction that they needed to go in. It was said in a way that only created turning animosity, turning them off from hearing what he had to say. And I think these two take-homes of how open are we to hearing the other side's perspective, and how capable are we of sharing what we have to say once we know their side and our side in a way that will be heard and that will actually bring to a healthier relationship. Those two ideas that come out of this testament of God can also be found in the commentaries on the verse in Leviticus chapter 19, verse 17, where it describes the mitzvah of rebuking, of tochcha, of confronting someone when we fear that there is a terrible injustice going on. And the pasuk there, again, in Leviticus 19:17 says, Lo tisna tachicha v'levavecha, hocheach tochiach et amitecha, v'lo tisa alav chet. Don't hate your brother in your heart. Rather, rebuke them, confront them, and then don't incur upon them or because of them guilt or sin. And there's an interesting interpretations here amongst the medieval scholars over what is the incurring sin that would happen when you don't rebuke someone and you hate them in your heart. The Ramban says as follows, and do not incur guilt because of him, to cover up the hatred for him in your heart and not to tell him, because in your rebuking him, he will apologize to you or will repent and admit his sin and be atoned. In other words, when we're going to confront someone with what we perceive and know now to be an injustice, can we do it in a way that the effect will be that the other side will actually apologize, that they'll actually repent and admit to the wrongdoing? Or are we going to do it in a way that will only push them into becoming more defensive and therefore only fan the flames of the conflict? And the other interpretation that I want to share with you is the Ibn Ezra, also on Leviticus 19:17, where he reads the flip side of this. And he says, on the word rebuke, hocheach, perhaps you will suspect him for a matter, and it is not so. And this the reason, and do not incur guilt because of him, because you will be punished as a result of what you did or think of him. Here the Ibn Ezra is saying a radical idea, that when you're about to go and rebuke someone, and you're about to give them tochacha, because you saw an injustice, you have to bring it up because the sin you might incur is that you read the story entirely wrong. That actually what you thought they did wrong wasn't wrong at all, and you read the story wrong. That's exactly what upset God, the son of Zilpah, in the testaments of God. That he suspected them falsely. Had he just simply rebuked them in a way that was curious, and according to the halakha, you have to first ask the other side, can you share with me what happened from your perspective? Before you just start screaming at them, you did this and that wrong. Because only that way will you be able to do what the Ibn Ezra is saying that we must do, which is learn. Be curious. Maybe we suspected and interpreted the situation wrong. So taking these two tips of the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban, of understanding their perspective before being upset. Maybe we misinterpreted. And conveying our critique, our feedback, in a way that will be heard, in a way that the other side would be open to even admitting that they did something wrong. I think we can imagine what Joseph could have done differently in engaging his brothers. Could he have asked them what had happened? Could he have said it over in a way that wouldn't have embarrassed and immediately have told to his father? Sharing the injustice that he perceives, whether it be towards how they're treating Bilhah and Zilpah's children, or how they're treating him, or how they're supposed to be taking care of him. Ultimately, Joseph and his brothers, as we know at the end of Genesis, are able to reconcile. And the Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah actually praises them, that even though things were difficult in their childhood, they were continuing to be upset with each other and to share their difficult things with each other. And only as a result of saying what was in their heart and saying it in their mouth, did they ultimately reconcile. And I think that this is a powerful lesson also for today. Can we redo this story slightly in our own lives, in our own relationships with our relatives, with our coworkers, with our friends, with our enemies, and find a way to express our perceptions of injustice in a way that we first try to understand their perception of justice, maybe we'll change our interpretation, and to be able to convey what we have to say in a way that maybe they would be even open to admitting that they were wrong and perhaps changing their opinion. And only then, I believe, we can fulfill what the Midrash says in the Sifrei and in Bereishit Rabbah and elsewhere in the Talmud, that tocha miviyah ledei shalom, that rebuke brings to peace. In the story that we saw in this week's parsha, rebuke didn't bring to peace. Rebuke was in the form of dibara'a in Lashon Hara. It just brought to more animosity. When done correctly, rebuke, however, can and must bring about shalom. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Roth. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.